Christian McBride, I believe, is the preeminent jazz bass player in the world today. Plays a lot of different music with a lot of different people. If you listen to Unreal Bluegrass on a regular basis, and thank you for that if the answer is yes, you've heard Bela Fleck, you've heard Sam Bush, you've heard Missy Raines and Jim Hurst playing jazz from a bluegrass perspective. I saw a video explaining why this show that you're about to listen to occurs. I saw a video of Christian McBride playing at Telluride Bluegrass Festival. It turns out that he does have a connection to bluegrass. And it's an interesting conversation in the second hour with Christian McBride as he talks about bluegrass from the jazz side looking forward, which will make sense when you listen to the second hour and his discussion of his introduction to bluegrass. Fascinating stuff. Thanks, Christian McBride. I am very happy to welcome to Unreal Bluegrass a favorite bass player of the world, I think, at this point, Christian McBride. How are you, Christian?
I'm doing well, Steve.
I'm so glad you could find the time. I know you're a busy, busy guy, and I wanted to talk to you about several things. I'm a big fan of your jazz music. I have been since the early 90s, and I think getting to it in 94, you were maybe 20, early 20s was, I think it was the first album you released under your name.
I was 22.
22 years old, and you're on there with Ray Brown, who I knew you knew before that.
Mm-hmm.
But so
that's correct.
I know that you're a follower of Ray Brown. Learned a lot from people like that. A lot of mentors in Christian McBride's life. And so here's what I would like for this conversation between you and I to do. A couple of things. I would like to do this also. I learned of Christian McBride from that album. Picked it up, and I learned from all the people that were on there. I knew who Ray Brown was and Milt Hinton, but other names I didn't wasn't that familiar with. But after that, every time I saw an album by them or one of those as a sideman, if I could, I would buy it because I knew it would be good music. So I think that's a doorway into music.
Well, that's a testament to your own curiosity. I commend you for that.
Well,
thank you.
It's because of people like you. And I start seeing your name. You're on hundreds of recordings, and you have many under your own name. We'll talk about a few of those if we have a minute to do that. But you open doors. Your 2011 recording of Conversations with Christian McBride, I tell people, look, if you want to get a feel for the expansiveness of what Christian does, that's a great album because it's you and a guest on each cut, and it runs the gamut. You even have a jazz harp player on there at one point.
Yeah, right.
And you have people doing stuff that's... You have an Isley Brothers song, who, by the way, I'm just south of Cincinnati. They're from Cincinnati. You have an Isley Brothers song done by Dee Dee Bridgewater.
That's correct.
These are the reasons that I am just fascinated by Christian McBride's musical taste and the things that you explore. And I saw you recently, Christian, on a tape out in Telluride, playing bluegrass with Sam Bush and Bela Fleck, and I thought, finally, maybe I can make that arc back from jazz back to bluegrass. We've done this discussion before with Sam and Bela and Allison Brown, and Slim Ritchie was a cool guy out west. He had a label, Ridge Runner Records. Everything he did was jazz, but he used bluegrass musicians. So, and David Grisman does jazz. So I thought,
right.
I've done it from that way with all those people, and I thought I could talk to Christian McBride about recent music. You won a Grammy last year for the big band album, which is kills me. But I also thought we could talk a little bit about how you wound up on stage with Sam Bush and Bela Fleck and Edgar Meyer, and you can, and maybe in a musician's terms, talk about how there's what's the connection at some point with those musicians and you.
Well, when you think of sort of the grooves of bluegrass, Nashville two beat feel, it's really or Western swing, it's really not that much different than jazz. The groove of it, you know, that sort of the clap on two and four, you know, that's not that much different than jazz. So the feel of it has never been foreign at all. Now what goes inside of that in terms of what the bass plays specifically in terms of the harmony and leading tones and passing tones and things like that. Yeah, you got to make a little bit of an adjustment if you come from the jazz world. But I think most of my favorite musicians are ones who are versatile and they can understand the ground rules for every style of music and adjust accordingly. My entry to the bluegrass world was actually through Bruce Hornsby.
Yeah.
I first started working with Bruce Hornsby roughly around the time I started recording Getting to It. This was in 1994.
Really?
And
How did you know him? You're from, as I understand, from the Philadelphia area.
Originally, yeah.
Okay, so where did you hook up with Bruce?
We just knew each other from, you know, I guess, you know, I was certainly a fan of his, not really realizing that he was a fan of mine from, you know, from afar. I think our mutual friend, well, I know our mutual friend was Branford Marcellus.
Oh, geez.
And then Bruce called and asked if I could play a couple of gigs with him in New York, and we were opening for Bonnie Raitt. I was a special guest with the Range. He brought me out to play like two or three songs per night, and it was a lot of fun. And then once I got to know Bruce, he started dropping names on me, like Vassar Clements and Ricky Skaggs and all of these people. And I knew the names, but I didn't really know what they did, you know. Through Ray Brown, I was introduced to Edgar Meyer.
Yeah.
And Edgar is such he's such a legend. He's such living legend.
He is. And he does everything. He's when you talked about that level of knowledge and being able to cross over, he's the pinnacle of it. He's the pinnacle of it.
Yes, he is. He's just incredible. So I deeply admire him already as a bassist. And then Ray Brown was the one that said, man, you got to hear him play bluegrass. You know, you think he's great at classical music. You ain't heard nothing yet, you know. And it was powerful for me to hear Ray Brown acknowledge Edgar's bluegrass pedigree, because I never thought of Ray Brown as a bluegrass listener either. So between Bruce and Edgar, you know, they told me that, you know, you need to get these records by the Stanley Brothers.
Really? You got Stanley? You did some research with the Stanley Brothers?
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. And it turns out the Stanley Brothers,
as I know,
were James Brown's label mates at King
Records in Cincinnati. You're right.
Exactly. Yeah, and so they started turning me on people like Lightning Chance and, you know, all of the Grand Ole Opry dudes. And, I, you know, between the bluegrass, and then I just kind of got around to listen to some Western swing, and I just really started getting into it. And that was my entry from, through Bruce and Edgar. And my first time actually playing it was with Ricky Skaggs and Bruce. We played a gig in St. Louis, or just outside of St. Louis. The Kentucky Thunder were the headliners.
Yeah.
And Bruce and I played a duet set, and we opened for him. And Ricky invited Bruce and myself to sit in with the Kentucky Thunder. I was so nervous. I thought, man, I don't know what I'm going to do. I wasn't really familiar with Ricky's music. And he said, man, don't worry about it. You know, the song we're going to do is going to be so easy. You know, you'll memorize it in like 10 seconds. And so Mark Fain was his bassist at the time.
Oh, yeah.
And so I'm standing next to Mark, and I said, okay, man, show me what to do. And he says, I think Ricky wants you up front with him. Oh. You're going to be like the second fiddle player. I was like, oh, you're kidding me. You know. So I was playing fiddle parts. And he just showed me a couple of lines, and he had me take a solo. And I wish I could remember what the song was, but it was really fast. It was really a fast song. Man, we had such a great time. And, that's how it happened.
Well, you jumped right in with both feet. You know, Ricky and Bruce then toured together, did a couple of albums together. Probably right after that. And then Bruce did an album before he hooked up with Ricky, where he won a Grammy for a bluegrass record.
That's right.
And it was called Mandolin Wind or something like that.
Yeah, Mandolin Rain.
Yes. It had a mandolin in it. So I think after that he thought he ought to go ahead and tour with Ricky for a while to get some more exposure in the bluegrass. And those are great. Those are fun albums. That's a great tie-in, because in the live album, you can hear Ricky telling Bruce, just go ahead, man, we'll follow you. It's like behind.
Right.
It's not loud, but it's in the background. And
right.
Bruce can play, you know, whatever he wants to. And the band that he had, that Ricky had then, as he has now, they can follow,
right.
They can follow it. Were you impressed with the ability of, let's, because we're talking about Ricky and Kentucky Thunder back then, with the ability of the musicians. That I think that might be an eye opener to people who haven't really listened a lot to bluegrass.
Yeah, these are superior musicians, and certainly in the last, I would say, 5 years, I've been particularly hanging around Edgar. You know, I've had a chance to meet Chris Steele and Stuart Duncan and Jerry Douglas. I mean, all these musicians are just...
They're fabulous.
They're grade A level musicians.
That's right.
And when I was in Nashville about, this was 4 years ago. I've been there recently. I was there earlier this year. But 4 years ago, I was with a group called the Monterey Jazz Festival on tour. It was an all-star band with Dee Dee Bridgewater and Chris Potter, Ambrose Akinmusiri, Benny Green, myself, and Lewis Nash. And so we were in Nashville one night. We had a night off. And so we're walking along Broadway, and, you know, just like the tourists that we were. And we said, hey, man, let's check this joint out. And we went to a place called Robert's Western World. And we heard Chris Scruggs, the guitarist, and pedal steel player. And then I didn't realize at the time, you know, I didn't put together that Chris Scruggs was Earl Scruggs' grandson, you know. And we struck up a talk in between sets, and man, it was. That was a mind-blowing experience, that because every musician in his band, I mean, we were digging it. We were all sitting in the audience like, whoa, listen to these cats, you know. And we enjoyed every minute. And they came and sat with us on the break. And it was so beautiful to see, like, these country Nashville dudes sitting with these New York jazz dudes.
That's a big part of it. Yeah.
Sitting together just talking about music, man.
It's all about music, and at that level it's just music. And that
you
all relate on the ability that you have and the knowledge that you have to make those jumps back and forth and really dig it. You just really dig it.
And the time jumpers, whoa.
Yeah.
You know? They I had a chance to sit in with them earlier this year when I went to Nashville, and everybody in that band would have no problem coming to New York and making it as a musician just because of their level of musicianship. You know, they could do anything.
I think that answers a lot of, because the people that I told you about, and we went through them all on the air, I don't remember, but of that group, their musicianship is so high. Bela, like Sam Bush, can do anything.
And, exactly.
And Allison Brown, who you're going to learn about after this.
That's right.
She can do anything. And all those people that do that crossover. Bill Keith has now passed away, but Bill was playing Night in Tunisia back in the 70s. And it was on a five-string banjo, and it was like, that's the coolest thing. And he recorded it out. Slim Ritchie was the guy out west. I mentioned him. He passed away a few years ago. I got him on the show to talk about this very topic. He was more into the Django-type swing stuff. And he was a guitar player, and he had a band, but he would do these records that brought in all these great jazz musicians, I mean, bluegrass musicians. And he did an album called Jazzgrass, and it was all these guys just swinging to all great bluegrass people that I knew, just doing jazz, and it was just an absolute blast. And they were so good at it. It's just we were in the studio for a day or two. We knocked it out. And I'm thinking, how did you guys walk over to that so quickly? And the answer becomes what you've been referring to is their level of knowledge and ability is so high, and once they get in the groove, it all sort of transfers back over again.
Right. Right.
Wow. That's great. Let me take just a few minutes with you. I know you're probably in a rush to get out of where you are, but congratulations on the big band album from last year, Grammy, on that.
Hey, thank you very much.
That is, I tell people, that's one of the best big band, and if you want to hear big band, current big band jazz music, that's the one. Original tune, the arrangements, just smoke, and they don't have to be loud and fast. I mean, all the arrangements are so tight, and I know you did all that.
Oh, thank you, man.
And you did the same thing a few years earlier with Good Feeling, the 2012 release, where you had another big band. So you do this real microcosm stuff with Conversations, which I think was around 2011, where it's just you and somebody else.
Right.
And then you exploded up into a big band jazz setting, and then you just bounce around and you kind of fit wherever. You're able to fit in wherever you want to fit in, and I think that you want to fit in wherever you want.
You know, I think, yes,
You're a music fan. You're a music fan.
You pretty much nailed it. You know, I also do it to be able to keep my musicianship skills sharp. You know, my favorite musicians are those ones I mentioned. You know, the ones that we've been talking about, where versatility is key to keeping your skills sharpened. You know, even if you can be a great musician and play in one steady band, but I've always felt that at some point you may start getting too comfortable if you play with the same people all the time. And you see other musicians, you think, man, I really would love to play with them one day, or I wonder what it feels like to play with those musicians, you know. So I've always wanted to dedicate myself to playing with as many musicians as possible. You know, being in different situations. You know, that way I know I can still play.
if you're not pushing it and not on the edge, you're too comfortable and you're gonna start getting lazy. I mean, I'm not saying that you would, but I think musicians that reach that level, if you just stay in that one pocket, you need to stretch your brain out a little bit.
That's why I love Chick Corea so much.
He's
the guy in his mid-70s, and he's still changing bands every, like, 6 months.
The thing with Steve Gadd that he just did, who I was so glad that, you know,
right.
You know Steve Gadd. I know him as one of those greatest jazz drummers that a lot of people don't get to hear about unless you really read the liner notes. And he does the Steve Gadd Chick Corea Band, and he calls it the Steve Gadd Chick Corea Band. I thought, man, that's strong. I just played some of that last night at the jazz show that I was, the jazz radio show. I just love it so much. And see, now Chick does stuff with Bela Fleck on a regular basis.
That's correct.
And
in fact, one of the songs, the title track to the record they did called The Enchantment, I was playing that song with my trio for a while.
Yeah.
That's one of the most beautiful songs.
It is. I've seen Chick solo, which is more than enough. The last time I saw you, and gosh, I think it might be the first and only, you were with Pat Metheny, the trio, and you were nearby here. There aren't that many jazz venues around here anymore, but I was a fan of yours before then. I can't think of how many years ago that was, but I wanted to see you. I've seen Pat in 4 or 5.
Was that in Cincinnati?
It was just north of Cincinnati in Hamilton, Ohio.
Oh, yeah, I remember that gig.
Little college setting with Eddie.
I remember that gig.
Was it Eddie? Who was the drummer? Eddie.
Antonio Sanchez.
Antonio Sanchez, yeah.
Yeah.
I keep thinking Eddie Sanchez is a whole different guy. but I know. Okay, yeah, so that was a blast. And I saw you. I was a fan of yours then, and I saw you. And to me, Pat is one of those otherworldly people.
Yes.
And I'm figuring, I'll go see him anywhere, any setting, by himself, with his harp guitar, whatever he wants to do. I'll go see Pat within 50 miles. And I thought, oh, I get to see Christian McBride also. And that was the most comfortable. I felt like you were, not that I doubted that you couldn't do it, but I felt like your playing was Pat, with Pat was, it was, you know, Pat was being challenged. I really did. I felt that.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
tell me a little bit about, before I let you go, about the, I keep reading this thing about New John?
The New John, yes, that's correct.
Tell me about that. It comes out in October is what I'm reading.
Yes. Well, my current working band, the band that I've spent the most time with over the last 2+ years has been my quartet, which is called The New John, which is a Philadelphia colloquialism for thing. You know, instead of saying quartet or band or ensemble, you can call it a joint, you know.
I crossed it off my list. That was one of my questions.
Yeah, so this is my new joint,
right.
And as people in Philly would say. And it's a pianoless quartet with Josh Evans on trumpet, Marcus Strickland on tenor sax, and the great Nasheed Waits on drums. And, you know, we've been globetrotting now for over 2 years, and the CD finally drops. Next month. I'm excited.
Now, is this you've been around, this is in the studio or is it live?
Well, it's interesting. We did a live
that
gig.
Isn't supposed to be a hard question, man.
Well, no, we recorded live.
Okay.
But we decided that we would come back to the club during the day when no one was there.
Oh, gotcha. All right.
It's a studio, in quotations, recording.
Gotcha. Okay, I understand.
Yeah.
Well, I will find it when it comes out. By the way, I got to hear you on NPR, and I was already thinking about a way to talk to Christian McBride for just music issues of my own concern, and you were reviewing the newfound John Coltrane album. So, and I was going to get it anyway, but when I heard you talking, I was like, I got to drive and find it right now, because Christian McBride, you've reached that level of commentator and expert and someone who look and make observations, and that just convinced me. I would have got it anyway. I mean, I was glad to hear you talk about it, but it was on my list as soon as it came out. This is one of those treasures that you hope they find more things that they allegedly lost.
Oh, well, yeah. I can't imagine how a John Coltrane album would get, you know, quote-unquote lost.
Yeah.
But I'm glad they released it, because that's some incredible music, and it was a joy to speak about it on All Things Considered, along with Robbie Coltrane.
That's right, Robbie. That's right. I knew you were someone else. Listen, man, I appreciate Christian McBride. I appreciate your time so much, and what you bring to music, and what you've helped me explore, and what you're still exploring. I'm going to try to follow behind you, and I would recommend to people that if they see Christian McBride's name, find out what he's doing. Check there aren't as many record stores, but check where he is. Don't try to. You could try to buy everything you've been on as a sideman, but they'll go broke because there's a couple hundred. But at least pick up the main things and follow Christian McBride, because he is he pushes himself. He steps on stage with a lot of great players and plays a lot of great music and always brings something special, because you want to also you're pushing yourself because you want to be excellent. You want to maintain that excellence.
Well, man, I appreciate your kind words, and you know I'm going to be in Cincinnati at the end of next month.
I did not know that.
Yep, I'll be in Xavier. Think it's October 26th I'll be there.
All right.
20-something.
Well,
it's toward the end of the month.
It's toward the end of the month. All right, that's not far. I will find that, and I'll track it down, and I'll make sure that I put it on my book somewhere. Man, I need to see you again. It's been too long. It's been a while.
Yes.
It's been a while since you were with that trio. What are you doing with the new John? Or are you bringing a big band?
This is with the new John.
I got to see it. I got to see it. All right, man. Christian McBride, man, thanks so much for your time and all you.
My pleasure.
All right, brother. See you.
Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye. There you have it. Christian McBride explains his introduction in the bluegrass from jazz legend Ray Brown. Who would have thought? So that's how we got started into bluegrass. Thanks again, Christian McBride. Wonderful opportunity. Thanks for your time. I know you're a busy guy. Unreal bluegrass fans appreciate your time.